All right, welcome to part four of the pandemic preparedness course at biodefense.com. By the way, I should mention, feel free to share this audio. This is being put out for free because it's such urgent information for humanity. Many people can use this information to literally save their lives. So I made a conscious decision not to charge for this, not to even require registration, and even to openly call for people to share these audio files on torrent websites. Share them anywhere you want. Just if you do share them, you know, give credit to biodefense.com so that other people can find this information. And this information is advertiser supported, as you probably noticed. There are some ads on the website, but I love that model because people can decide whether they want to pay any attention to the ads or not. It's their choice. And because I believe in freedom of information and freedom of choice, this is the perfect way to present this information. If it is successful enough in reaching a large enough number of people, I will continue to put together more preparedness, survival, and even permaculture courses in this same format. Right now, I'm working on some really amazing permaculture technology that I'll be sharing with the world next year in 2015. And by the way, if you're wondering who this is Mike Adams, the Health Ranger, the editor of naturalnews.com. Now, in this section, part four of the pandemic preparedness course, I'm going to talk about the government response to pandemics and also secondary failures of infrastructure. Now, coming up in this course, I am going to list the specific antiviral herbs that you can acquire and that you can grow yourself, some of them, that you really need to have on hand. Remember that we are dealing with a situation here where modern medicine, as much as it has saved many lives with antibiotics over the years, has really reached a dead end. It has no solutions for today's pandemic outbreaks. Even when it does come up with vaccines, these vaccines are often worthless because they're outdated, or even sometimes the vaccines themselves are dangerous. Some vaccines contain live viruses that haven't been properly weakened. We covered this on Natural News with the Baxter Company accidentally shipping out live viruses to be put into flu shots. That's why sometimes flu shots cause the flu. That's why polio shots sometimes cause polio-like symptoms. That's why some vaccines are actually dangerous. Not all of them, but some of them are. So even if there is a vaccine that is put out there and really heavily pumped up by the media, by the CDC, by the vaccine industry, that's no guarantee that the vaccine is going to work or that it's even going to be safe. Everybody needs a backup plan that doesn't depend on government and that doesn't depend on the corrupt criminal pharmaceutical companies, most of which have actually been found guilty of multiple felony crimes, including Pfizer, by the way. So in looking at the typical government response to a pandemic, we have really two competing interests in government. One faction of government wants to completely downplay any pandemic. They don't want people to become fearful. They don't want social chaos. They don't want anyone to really know the truth because there's nothing they can do for the public, really. If the situation is bad enough, so bad that really a lot of people are going to die, such as, let's say there's a giant asteroid heading toward Earth that's going to slam into the Atlantic Ocean, government won't tell you about it until they have to, you know, until it's obvious. A giant rock in the sky, hey, everybody notices. They're not going to say anything until it's so late that you can't do anything about it. Why? Because you can't evacuate the entire eastern seaboard of the United States. You can't evacuate the United Kingdom. It's impossible, so they won't even bother telling you about it. All they're going to do is have an action plan for cleaning up the aftermath of the disaster. So if there is an Ebola outbreak, or even, let's say, a deployment of a weaponized Ebola by an enemy of America, such as, a terrorist group, or maybe even an enemy nation like Russia or communist China, for example. Suppose they drop weaponized Ebola over, Seattle or New York. The government is probably going to downplay that for a number of reasons. Number one, they don't want to admit that their national defenses can be easily broken or penetrated by these enemy nations. Secondly, they don't want people to panic, and they don't want people to not trust in government. This is a crucial issue. Big government survives based on faith primarily. Government is not really that efficient at providing services, and it certainly isn't good at accounting for costs or spending taxpayer money. Government exists primarily based on faith. And if people lose faith in the government, then the government is at risk of maybe an internal political overthrow. you know, someone sweeping in and taking over, or even outside reforms, or even revolutions, as history has shown. So government's going to be, or certain factions of government are going to be very reluctant to admit to any kind of a failure to control their own borders or control the health of the nation. But now there's another faction within government that wants to hype up infectious diseases as much as possible. This is the CDC and the FDA, both of which are really just hoard out criminally corrupt propaganda arms of the vaccine industry. And as whores of the vaccine industry, they are out there to try to create as much fear and panic as possible so that they can then prop up the stock prices of drug companies, which most of these people are invested in. People who work for the CDC and the FDA have all kinds of financial ties to big pharma. And then they also want to redirect government money into funding big grants, multi-million dollar grants to these drug companies to develop vaccines for the pandemic so that the vaccines can be mandated across the population and thereby generate billions of dollars in revenue for these drug companies. We saw this with the swine flu pandemic, which was a fake pandemic that the CDC and the WHO both really exaggerated, wildly exaggerated the outbreak in order to get nations of the world to purchase billions of dollars worth of vaccines, which they ended up later having to hire other companies to dispose of because they didn't even need all those vaccines. In fact, that outbreak just kind of petered out and wasn't a big deal at all. So when you look at government's response to this, you have to think about whose statement are you listening to and what branch of government is it coming from? Department of Homeland Security will tend to downplay threats to the nation for the reasons I mentioned earlier. They don't want to look weak or vulnerable. CDC and FDA will tend to exaggerate the risk of harm from pandemic outbreaks because they want to promote vaccine sales, government grants to vaccine research companies, and anything that will financially benefit big pharma. So keep that in mind as you look at government's response to this. Now, the most important thing to keep in mind here is that big government is interested in the survival of only one thing, big government. Now, this is true of really any institution. A university, for example, is primarily interested in the survival of the university, not of its students or teachers or staff. A government is interested in the survival of itself, not the survival of its citizens, which can be easily, you know, replaced in any nation in the world. There are plenty of citizens, but the government itself must remain intact. So the number one priority of the United States government is to preserve the continuity of government. And for this reason, there are all sorts of plans in place for government officials to go deep underground into literal underground bunkers and survive anything, a nuclear attack, a giant meteor slamming into the planet, a massive solar flare, grid down scenario, or even a big pandemic outbreak. And I always find it hilarious how the mainstream media will tend to depict preparedness citizens as kooks and wackos and tinfoil hat people when they have their own private bunkers. Meanwhile, President Obama has the biggest bunker of all. The government has all kinds of bunkers, underground cities, in fact. And of course, that's not considered wacko by the mainstream media. So they're very selective about who they consider to be crazy just based on how big your bunker is. The bigger your bunker, the more sane you are, according to the mainstream media, because the government has the biggest bunkers of all. Now, in order to preserve itself, the government has lots of plans in place. Most of these plans are secret. Some of them have been made partially public because they have been codified through the signing of executive orders. So President Obama and other presidents before him have signed numerous executive orders. These executive orders essentially say, in summary, that the government can suspend the entire Bill of Rights, and they own you, and they own everything that you think you own, including all your property, all your food, all your gold. They control everything, and they can restrict any right that you think you have. And if you don't believe me, then just look up some of the executive orders that are on the books and see how government has already laid claim to all seeds, cattle, tractors, fuel, firearms, ammunition, medical supplies, land, water, everything, and even people. And one of the most relevant executive orders to a pandemic preparedness context is the one that was recently signed over the summer of 2014 by President Obama, which stated that any person who is symptomatic in public, in other words, coughing or sweating or looking sick and might be carrying an infectious disease can then be quarantined at gunpoint by the federal government, which means government guys show up, they say, we're quarantining you, come with us. They can shove guns in your face, they can put you in handcuffs, they can do whatever that they want to do. They can throw you into a quarantine center. Now, this quarantine concept, it's crucial to understand how government thinks about quarantines. Now, I'm going to first explain this from the point of view of government. Let's say that government is wonderful, and they're all angels, and they just want to help humanity. Even from that perspective, if you have a nation of over 300 million people like we have in the United States, and you have a combination of big cities and small towns, rural and urban areas, if you start to see an outbreak of Ebola in one area, let's say one city, let's pick a city, Nashville, Tennessee, just picking a random city here. If they see an outbreak happening in Nashville, what are they going to do? They're going to quarantine Nashville. They're going to shut that city down for the right reasons. This is actually the humanitarian justification that they will give you, and I can't say that I disagree with it. If there's an outbreak in Nashville or any other city, and it's isolated to that city, then what government has to do for the protection of everyone else around the country is to really lock down that city by force, and that's exactly what they will do. They will create a military barrier around the city of Nashville. They will close down all flights. They will cancel the airspace. Anybody that tries to get in and out of there could be shot down by a military, you know, an F-16 that's tailing you. And believe me, the F-16 can very easily catch your Cessna 172. So you will be shot down if you try to escape the city in your private airplane. You will also be hunted down if you try to escape the city on foot, motorcycle, hiking, horseback, whatever the case may be. Unless you know some secret tunnels out of Nashville, your chances of getting out of Nashville are pretty darn slim. Now, the government's going to quarantine cities like that that experience outbreaks to the extent that they can manage them. But if the outbreak continues to explode and multiply, they're not going to be able to quarantine Nashville and, let's say, Los Angeles and San Diego and Boulder, Colorado. You know, it's just not going to work. Or Denver, forget it. At that point, it's hopeless. At that point, the government really can only invoke sort of a cleanup aftermath kind of strategy, even if they want to just help people. Now, the sad reality of the situation is that there won't be enough medical supplies to go around. There won't be FEMA helpers to come around and rescue you. There won't be enough water supplies and food supplies to go around. They simply don't exist. FEMA couldn't even handle one hurricane in New Orleans, much less pandemics spreading through every major city around the world. So at that point, what the government's going to focus on is its own survival while just trying to prevent the nation from collapsing into a total runaway Mad Max scenario. And to do that, they're going to have martial law declared and in place. And people who cause trouble in these scenarios will be shot on sight. Now, we've already seen this in West Africa, where the military has taken control in some countries. Martial law is in place. Residents have been told to, quote, shelter in place. Stay in your home for the next 3 days, 4 days, 5 days. If you come out, you're going to be arrested or maybe even shot, or even worse, you're going to be thrown in the quarantine with people that we know have Ebola, meaning you'll probably get it too, and you'll die in quarantine. Now, I know this all sounds a little harsh to people who aren't used to dealing with reality, but this is exactly what is happening in West Africa right now. And if it spreads to the United States, everything that I've just described here is already on the books. It's already in the plans that the federal government has in place. And most people, most citizens, because they have not prepared, they're going to add to the burden of the crisis. Most people who live in cities, most Americans, let's face it, are really clueless about the potential of this to happen in America, or even the inevitability of a pandemic virus sweeping through the human population across the planet. People, by and large, don't prepare. So they don't have extra water. They don't have extra food. They don't even have a flashlight in most cases, which I found just astonishing because I carry a flashlight with me everywhere I go. I mean, absolutely everywhere, especially if I'm traveling by air or visiting some other city where I don't live. I'm going to have a flashlight with me. People just aren't prepared. So they become a burden. They become a crisis. And the government simply does not have the resources or the manpower or even the willingness, actually, to help every single person in the nation who is part of that crisis. It's impossible. You can even call in the United Nations, as Obama might be tempted to do. United Nations is going to be busy dealing with the pandemic over in Europe or other countries. Forget it. There is no helper that's going to just come along and solve these problems. The truth is that you're going to have to solve your problems yourself. You won't be able to depend on dialing 911. You won't be able to depend on FEMA coming along and helping you. They're more likely to throw you in a FEMA camp with infected patients than anything else. You might be able to depend a little bit on your local state guard or national guard. Those tend to be good men and women who are trying to do the right thing, but they're going to be short-staffed as well. And many of those people are going to be AWOL trying to stay home and protect their families. So you can't depend on the infrastructure. You might not even get water out of the city water supply. You're not going to be able to probably get food at your local grocery store. You may not be able to get cash out of the ATM. You may not be able to drive anywhere because it's going to be a little bit of a Mad Max scenario on the roads. You might get hijacked. You might get robbed or looted or who knows what. Depends on what level of civil behavior is in place in the area where you live. So what can you depend on? You can depend on your neighbors. You can depend on your family members. You can depend on your close friends. You might be able to depend on your local sheriff's office. Small towns are going to be great places to ride this thing out because small towns will tend to bond together and have a mutual defense and a mutual agreement for survival. There might be barter situations set up. There might be emergency medicine available in a local small town. Usually small town sheriffs are pretty good people who are just trying to keep the peace and maintain order. You may even help contribute to that if possible through donations of supplies or volunteering your time. So there are a lot of good people all across America who will try to maintain order, but in a big city, they're going to tend to be dominated by armed gangs, such as Los Angeles or, let's say, East St. Louis, for example, or Chicago, Detroit, you know, forget it. It's not going to be a place for survival. It's going to be a place to evacuate or die. So get into a small town if you can. Get out into the country if you can. Practice self-reliance. Teach yourself the skills that you need to survive on your own so that you can make it through this time when the government is not going to be able to have a sufficient response to help people, even if the government wanted to. All right? So it doesn't even matter if you believe the government is good or if you believe the government is inherently evil. Either way, they don't have the resources to help you, even if they want to. We saw this with Superstorm Sandy on the eastern seaboard a couple of years ago. We've seen it in every major disaster. The government is completely overwhelmed and really unable to help very many people at all. So those who depend on government are really, they're playing Russian roulette with their lives. Now, where government really becomes a threat to public health is if they decide to run around and start mandating vaccines. This is where they're going to meet a whole lot of resistance because there's a whole lot of people out there, including myself, who are not going to voluntarily roll up our sleeves and say, yeah, inject me with some weakened Ebola viral strain. That's not going to happen. Now, I know there are some vaccines under development that aren't using actual viral strains from Ebola. They are they're based on a different technology, so they don't really inject you with Ebola DNA fragments. But history has shown that we can't trust these vaccines. The CDC, for example, is still involved in this massive cover-up involving Dr. William Thompson, who openly admitted to committing vaccine fraud or scientific fraud at the CDC to cover up the links between the MMR vaccine and autism in young African-American children. We've published detailed letters from Dr. Thompson on naturalnews.com that you can see to back that up. And he's made a public confession admitting all of that. The CDC still refuses to acknowledge that that ever happened. The CDC will lie to you about vaccines. They will say mercury is safe. So why wouldn't they say that a deadly Ebola vaccine that that has, let's say, I don't know, a 1% faulty rate where 1 out of 100 people who get injected with it actually accidentally get some live Ebola virus, do you think the CDC would admit that? Of course not. So if you allow yourself to be injected with an Ebola vaccine, you are rolling the dice on your life. You're putting your life in the hands of the CDC, which is a criminal-minded, wholly corrupt, mafia-style organization. I mean, they fund scientists that have been on the FBI's most wanted list who are engaged in money laundering and massive scientific fraud. I mean, their scientists knowingly harm little black babies, and they've done it year after year after year. They know it. They're criminals, okay? That's who runs the CDC. That's who's in that organization. Only every once in a while does a whistleblower go public with some truth about the CDC and wake people up. And usually the mainstream media completely refuses to cover that. So if you are, in effect, agreeing to allow yourself to be injected with a vaccine that the CDC says is safe, then you're putting your life at risk. There's no other way to say it. Now, you might be lucky. You might be lucky and not be harmed by it. You might be really lucky and somehow the vaccine actually works. You might be unlucky and just die from the vaccine. So there's going to be a lot of resistance to that, especially if the vaccine hasn't undergone clinical trials, which is almost certainly going to be the case. The CDC, the vaccine companies, they already have complete legal immunity from faulty products. That was an act of Congress. So they have no liability whatsoever if their product kills people. You understand this, right? The Vaccine Injury Compensation Program has given them complete legal immunity. So if they have a faulty product that kills you or kills your child, they say, well, oops, it's your fault. We have no liability. That's the vaccine industry. That's the way it exists right now, today. So they're not going to have time to test the vaccine. They're going to roll it out as an experimental vaccine where you are the guinea pig. The public will be the guinea pigs on this. And they could at some point say, everybody has to take the vaccine. And if you haven't had the vaccine, well, you can't open a bank account, or you can't use public transportation, or you can't fly on an airplane, or you can't even conduct a financial transaction or use your credit card. They could use all kinds of methods to shut you down, shut down your life if you don't agree to have that vaccine. And that, if that happens, that's going to be a very tenuous situation. I can guarantee you there are going to be a lot of people in America who are not going to be happy with that situation. They don't trust the CDC. They don't trust the vaccine companies for good reason, but they honor the Bill of Rights. They honor their individual liberties and freedoms, and they're not going to allow a medical dictatorship to tell them what they can and cannot do. So you can expect a lot of resistance if that situation ever comes to pass, which hopefully it won't. We would hope that if there is an experimental vaccine available, that the government would have the sense to say, well, it's voluntary only. Anybody who wants the vaccine can get it, but we're not going to force it on people. In that case, I'm okay with that, because people who line up to be injected with an experimental Ebola vaccine, you know, probably not the smartest people on the planet in the first place. So if they want to be their own human guinea pigs, then let them do that. You know, that's their choice. It's not my place to interfere with it. But for the rest of us who don't want to die at the hands of the CDC, well, we would rather say no. After all, shouldn't we have a choice in whether we want to take that risk, since it's an experimental medicine? Now, by the way, if the government really does come along and say, you have to take the vaccine, you have to be injected with it, if that happens, make sure you come back to this website, biodefense.com, because I will give you extremely valuable strategies that can bolster your defenses against the vaccine, even if that vaccine contains live viruses. There are many people who survive exposure to Ebola. It's possible. It's doable. Your own immune system is a miracle of nature, and it has great potential to keep you alive. On top of that, there are other things that you can do to bolster your immune support in anticipation of being forcibly injected, so that you can vastly increase your odds of surviving a mandatory vaccination program. I'm not saying that you should agree to be vaccinated, but hey, if 12 guys show up your door at gunpoint like they did following the Boston Marathon, where they marched these families out of their own homes in violation of the Fourth Amendment, but if these guys show up with guns and say, you come out of the house, you get on the street, you're going to be vaccinated right now, what are you going to do? You going to argue with them? No, they're using gunpoint medicine at that point. You have no choice but to comply or be shot or arrested. So, of course, you're going to comply. You're going to get injected. There are things that you can do before that injection and after that injection to shore up your defenses to vastly improve your odds of surviving that vaccine. And those are things that I will give you here on biodefense.com. These are urgent strategies that the public needs to know. So no matter what the scenario, you're going to be covered. You're going to have some tactics that you can use to enhance your immune function and increase your odds of survival. And that's the whole point of this course, to help more people survive no matter what scenario comes along. If there's no vaccine, here's what you can do. I'll lay it out for you in this course. If there is a vaccine, you can always say no to the vaccine. You can use these other alternatives. Or if you choose to say yes to the experimental vaccine, here are some other things that you can do to increase your odds of survival. So no matter what scenario comes around, you've got options. You've got ways to boost your odds of living through this so that you can contribute to society, the rebuilding of society that would take place afterwards. I'm a big believer in the long-term survival of the human race, although I think humanity has a lot of lessons to learn, and some of these lessons are going to be very difficult for people to grasp and for societies to really learn. But I'm a big believer in optimism for humanity. I know that we're going to make it through these things, even if let's say 25% of the world population dies from something like this. Well, there's still 75% left remaining. How do we then give that 75% the information and the tools and the resources they need to rebuild society, to make a stronger society, to continue to innovate and move forward for humanity so that we can actually one day get off this planet and have redundancy for human survival? Those are the kinds of things that I think about. But to get off the planet, we have to survive the pandemic that is coming, which has been caused by our own actions. We humans have created the superbugs through the abuse of antibiotics. We humans have created the imbalance in the global ecosystem by poisoning our environment, flushing poisons down the drain into the oceans, destroying ocean life, destroying the ecosystem, cutting down the rainforest, destroying the diversity of life that exists on our planet, spraying poisons, genetic pollution through GMOs, glyphosate chemicals that cause cancer at parts per billion concentrations, spraying pesticides and herbicides all over our food, putting synthetic chemicals into foods and medicines and personal care products and home construction materials. We humans have poisoned our world. We have caused the imbalance that is now Mother Nature's payback in the form of infectious diseases. So if you really want to know where all this comes from, it comes from us. We humans have poisoned our planet, and now we are paying the price for it with imbalance in the ecosystem that is expressed in the form of infectious disease. So we are the source of the pandemics. So don't let anybody tell you, oh, it came from monkeys. No, we are the source. We're the ones who poisoned the planet. So by destroying the ecosystem, we've allowed them to explode. And by living and promoting immunosuppressive lifestyles across the human population, we have created the perfect storm for a pandemic to come through and wipe out a significant portion of humanity. Again, I pray that doesn't happen. But if it does, this is where you're going to get information that can help save your life. So keep checking in with biodefense.com. And thanks for listening today. My name's Mike Adams, the Health Ranger of naturalnews.com.